Stop! You violated the law.
It's the Full Preview Podcast. UFC 300.
All right, guys, let's do this. This is the big one. I'm Fenyo. This is the Full Preview UFC 300, the one we've all been waiting for. This is a huge event. This is happening on April 13th, this Saturday, live on Las Vegas, Nevada, on the T-Mobile Arena, or whatever. And it's stacked, like bottom to top. Not like one fight that I feel like... there's a few that I'm super excited, but the thing is that this is fucking stacked. That's the main thing about this card, like from the first prelim to the main event, there's like very few things that are not like super divisional important, and even those that are not are like very exciting on paper. So why don't we just get into it? Because there's a lot to talk about here. And like, as I said, this is insane from the get-go. The opening fight is a bantamweight bout between former flyweight champion Davison Figueiredo facing off against former bantamweight champion Cody No Love Garbrandt. So this was supposed to happen like 3 or 4 years ago at flyweight. Never materialized when Figueiredo was the flyweight champion and Garbrandt was talking about moving down. But now it's finally happened at 135. So yeah, to many, this one is a foregone conclusion. Davison will catch Cody and will KO him. That's like the narrative around. While the possibility of that happening is not low, I think this is a very compelling matchup. If you take into account what have troubled both fighters in the past, Garbrandt has a good amount of things going for him heading into this fight. We cannot forget that he's also, just like Figueiredo, a big, big hitter. And to this day, like, given the tough Brian Kelleher, just his second KO loss in his storied career, the first one to put him out was notoriously heavy-handed John Lineker. Not only that, Garbrandt is the cleaner operator when it comes to footwork, both on the outside and inside the pocket. Figueiredo has excellent timing, a sense of distance, but he can and has been outpositioned in the past. And even if he has an advantage, if they just like exchange leather on the inside, he doesn't adjust his feet well. He can also forget to move his head. And in a fight between two big hitters, anything can happen. When it comes to durability, Garbrandt was put out by Kai Kara-France down at 125. But I think his durability has looked fine since returning to 135. Even in the third round against Trevin Jones, I think it was more about like Cody taking bad decisions and panicking because he was like so concerned about like getting this W back. I mean, getting back in the win column. And it was more about that than him being like actually hurt. If you rewatch that fight, like Cody doesn't look like... He looks scared, but he doesn't look like he's very wobbly. And even in like his prime knockouts, like against TJ Dillashaw and Pedro Munhoz, Cody was being put out like being absolutely blindsided, being an idiot inside the pocket. Not much about like him having a soft shin. Actually, he took like huge shots in all three of those losses, and he was like fine at first. We probably expect Davison's durability to be improved with the move to bantamweight. His shin has had spotty moments in the past, particularly in his series against Brandon Moreno. And he walks into the octagon as both the older and more shopworn fighter when it comes to like amount of fights. On the flip side, obviously, Garbrandt has been finished more times. Wrestling-wise, they are probably going to neutralize each other if they even try to go there. Figi has been taken down in the past, mostly by body lock attacks. So there's a chance that Cody tried his luck with his quick leg attacks. I know it's like a different there because Garbrandt mostly shoots to the legs. Figueiredo has been taken down by body locks, but Garbrandt probably is gonna try at least a takedown, I feel. That said, even if Garbrandt has an edge on pure wrestling, I think it might be more dangerous for him to end up on bottom. And it's probably safer for Figueiredo to look for his like snatch single leg takedown. The clinch is a place where Fig probably has a sizable advantage, unless Cody is able like to push him against the fence to stall. I think Cody's chances are a lot better than people think, and I'm tempted to pick him. But it's the mental side that makes me side with the Brazilian here. As the fight goes longer, I expect things to get messier, and while both guys tend to get sloppier in situations like this, I feel like late career Garbrandt has this shaky quality to him that makes me nervous, and while Figueiredo looks tired early during fights nowadays, he stays very composed and I trust his decision making more. So the final pick is Figueiredo. He wins by third round knockout. The next bout is contested at 155 lightweight. It's a fight between King Bobby Green and Jim fucking Miller. So this is a matchup between lightweight veterans. Jim Miller gets to complete his prophecy of fighting in UFC 100, 200 and now 300. Bobby Green doesn't come with the momentum Miller does, but he has been fighting a higher level of opposition overall and has had higher highs, while Miller has been looking great dispatching the lower half of the division as of late. Miller is the better put together mixed martial artist, I would say, being very well rounded, a hard kicker at distance who can play the typical southpaw game but also has developed a more refined counter punching approach as of late. Despite having somewhat janky mechanics to his punches, Miller is also an aggressive dirty boxer, decent wrestler and outstanding grappler. Green is a bit less coherent, but not less competent in every phase of the game, better known as a boxer with his hands down style and quick strikes. Green is somewhat of an underrated kicker and is a lot better at dealing with kicks that you might expect, especially when he stands so heavy on his front foot, but he has that like tall stance that allows him to like quickly shift weight to check kicks. Inside the clinch, there's a bit of a thigh flare as he is well versed attacking with knees and elbows from different grips and uses his footwork to move opponents well into strikes inside the clinch. Green is also a good wrestler, and while he can be surprised on the feet standing tall, he's not afraid to grind for position to wrestle up to his feet once on the mat. Green will have the speed advantage, but Miller can be tricky with his timing, and his janky mechanics might allow him to catch Green if he makes the wrong read. Miller is also the more dangerous submission threat, and despite looking tired often in fights, I think Miller maintains his output better late into fights. All that being said, I think the quick straight punching, clean footwork and tricky defense of Green will give him the edge on this one. Miller will probably have his moments, but Bobby doesn't offer the easy targets Jim has been exploiting in his early finishes, and will also deal with someone who will test his defense during prolonged exchanges. So my pick here is that Bobby Green gets the knockout on the second round. Next one is a strawweight bout between former champion Jessica Andrade against Marina Rodriguez. Both girls are coming off promising wins, somewhat recovering from losing streaks that put their place at the top of the division in doubt. Marina faces a fellow power striker in this one in Andrade after failing to win her fight against Amanda Lemos. I thought she looked kinda shook on that fight. Rodriguez does have the long and powerful striking that Yasha Onando used to clip Andrade, but she lacks the mobility on the outside, so she will probably be more vulnerable to Andrade's attacks and will have to exchange more. If they exchange, either could go down. Andrade seemed to not be at its best anymore. Marina, despite showing a solid chin against Xiaonan, look a bit shook, as I already said, with the power coming her way from Lemos. There's a few X factors in this fight. First, there's the kicks. Jessica doesn't have much setups for her low kicks, but they're powerful and they can be very useful against a longer opponent. Marina, for her part, has long kicks, particularly a long snap kick to the body that can prove very useful in this matchup. Then you have the clinch, where despite her tremendous strength, we've seen Jessica struggle there, getting out position. And that's exactly where Marina is at her most dangerous with knees and elbows, and she knows how to use her height advantage well there. Finally, we have the wrestling, which might save Jessica from prolonged clinches. Marina is not exceptional at getting back to her feet, but she's good at staying safe. And Andrade is not the level of grappler than, let's say, like Mackenzie Dern or Birna Jandirova, but her ground and pound cannot be ignored. I think the advantages Marina has at long range and inside the clinch make me side with her. over Andrade, especially at this point in her career. So I think Marina gets the finish in the second round. That's my final pick. The next one is a lightweight bout. We're back to lightweight and we have Jaylen Turner, the Tarantula, against Renato Moicano, Money Moicano. While Moicano is more than a capable striker, this is likely to play as a striker versus grappler matchup. Don't think Moicano will have a pleasant time striking with Turner at range, since he has had trouble engaging with like Jai Herbert from range when he wasn't safe from his jabbing distance. That's something that Moicano usually had at 145. Turner has struggled with takedowns in the past, particularly leg attacks, and Moicano is no stranger to shoot, but he usually does most of his best work wrestling-wise from body locks. And Turner looks very strong from those positions. Moicano needs to get his own jab going and trying to time the leg kicks of Turner if he wants an easy path to get the fight to the ground. And for Turner's part, he needs to be patient, use his long-range weapons, and try to make Moicano close the distance irresponsibly so he can get him into pocket exchanges where his power and timing are likely to get the Brazilian hurt. Moicano is not the wrestler that Gamrot is, but he's more dangerous from top position for sure, and maybe after one takedown, Turner will become more shy after realizing the magnitude of the consequences if he makes a mistake. On the flip side, Moicano can become too one-dimensional and lose confidence in his soul striking when he feels like he needs to wrestle. And I don't think he can simply sit at range waiting for Turner to fuck up and give him like the entry that he needs. Jaylen is too long, sharp, and powerful to do that. Finally, I think Turner, being a fast starter who is quick to get his distance and timing into bouts, will be very important here. And that's the reason that I expect him to make Moicano like hyper-focus on the takedowns, to the point that Moicano won't be able to set his takedowns well enough. So I think Jaylen Turner gets the knockout on the first round. Next fight is at featherweight, and we have Super Sadiq Yusuf against Diego Lopez. An action fight between 145ers looking to move up to the upper echelons of the division. Sadiq comes from a main event loss to veteran Edson Barboza, while Diego Lopez quickly dispatched Pat Sabatini and Gavin Tucker after an impressive losing effort on short notice against Movsar Ibloyev. Lopez comes with a length and a reach advantage, is very aggressive, and is known for his tricky submission game. Sadiq is probably the bigger hitter of the two, and will probably have a technical edge at range if the pace isn't like crazy high. One thing to consider in this fight is that despite the apparent grappling advantage on paper for Lopez, Yusuf is very heavy from top position and has good fundamentals. He has been a long time Lloyd Irvin student, and independent of what you think of Lloyd Irvin, controversies aside, I do not think very highly of him as a person, but his grapplers seem to be very decent actually. And Lopez has had trouble off his back despite his resourcefulness, as we saw in his contender series fight against Johannerson Brito, also like a very like dense, powerful athlete like Sadiq. Sadiq is also probably the better wrestler, so I would not be surprised to see him get a takedown and stay on top position if the chance is there. What Lopez brings to this fight is pace, aggression, fluidity between faces, which all could be troublesome for the Nigerian. As he has been surprised by fighters changing the script on him in the past, he can get too focused on like punches, on striking, getting surprised with takedowns inside the clinch during transitions. But what makes me side with Sadiq is his cleaner counter-punching and power. Since Lopez is content to put on long combinations with his head right on the center line, just trusting his ability to get behind his shoulders. Sadiq's ability to kick at range makes me think he'll be able to control the chaos that the Brazilian will bring to the table. I think Sadiq Yusuf wins a decision. Next, we have a bantamweight bout between Holly Holm, who welcomes Kyla Harrison to the UFC. This is a fight of numerous unknowns, as Harrison is dropping 20 pounds from her PFL run, where she fought exclusively at lightweight to meet former champion Holly Holm at 135. Harrison made 145 once back in 2020 for Invicta, but we're talking about a whole nother 10 pounds here. She does seem to have been losing mass and supposedly made a test cut to 135, so we are assuming here that she looks somewhat like herself here. Getting that out of the way, Holm, even at 42 years old, will probably still be the most athletic and well-rounded athlete that Harrison has faced in MMA, only rivaled maybe by Larissa Pacheco, who handed Harrison her only loss, but who is a very different opponent stylistic-wise. Holm herself has trouble with athletic and well-rounded fighters. Discounting the early knockout at the hands of Amanda Nunes, she just lost to Mayra Bueno Silva and Caitlin Vieira. And while there are both those two Brazilian girls are better strikers than Harrison, Harrison will be the best wrestler Holm has faced since losing the title to Misha Tate back in 2016. And it is safe to say that Harrison will be more physically imposing than Misha was. I think Holm has the tools to frustrate Harrison on the feet for sure, as her long blitzy karate style has been hard to figure out and drove her to a title win against another former Olympian judoka, just like Harrison in Ronda Rousey. The one thing that concerns me here is that with time, Holm has been relying more and more on clinching with opponents when her movement failed her, and to keep herself safe after exchanges, taking advantage of her superior physicality. But not only Harrison will match her physically here, the clinch is exactly where she wants the fight. Holm knows how to clinch under her own terms, as she showed in her legendary performance against Rousey, but she has struggled later in her career clinching with physical fighters willing to strike. There are numerous examples of this: Cyborg, Jermaine de Randamie, Vieira, Bueno Silva, all give fits to Holm inside the clinch. Unless Harrison is completely ruined by the weight cut, I think she grinds a decision victory here. Next, we're back at 145 featherweight. In another interdivisional matchup, we have Calvin Kattar giving the welcome to featherweight to Aljamain Sterling. And the unknowns keep on coming as former bantamweight champion moves up to 145 to meet divisional staple and multiple times main eventer Calvin Kattar. Sterling was always fairly big and especially rangy at 135, able to annoy fighters at range with his straight punches and his kicking variety before closing distance to put his grindy wrestling and versatile grappling to good use. Kattar himself always has been a big size 145er and will have a 4-inch height advantage, and thankfully for Aljo, just a single inch on reach on the former champion. Kattar has consistently been a sturdy defensive wrestler, having only been taken down by Magomed Sharipov and Fishgold around 5 years ago, and has defended numerous takedowns from decent wrestlers in Dan Ige and Josh Emmett. His boxing style and length also seem very concerning for the former bantamweight, as his long 1-2s and sneaky footwork during exchanges look to be tailor-made to take advantage of Sterling's big reactions, particularly now that Sterling won't have his kicking distance as a surefire safe haven. Sterling still has some things going for him. He moves well around the cage and will have a foot speed advantage. Kattar's pressure in footwork isn't great, and while his game plan didn't allow him to get going against the similarly long to Kattar Sean O'Malley, he was successful in getting to the back and submitting fellow lanky fighter in Corey Sanhagen. A lot of questions hang in how will Sterling look moving up. Will he be too small? If he shows up big, will he be able to keep pace or move around as well as he did at 135? We've seen wrestlers struggle moving up, both for lacking physicality or for losing speed and cardio with their new added mass. For example, like Kevin Lee moving up to 170 comes to mind. And on top of that, I already favor Kattar stylistically, so I'm picking Calvin Kattar to win by second round knockout. Next, we have the feature bout of the prelims, and it is in the same division that our main event. At light heavyweight, we have a fight between Jiří Procházka, former champion, against Alexander Rakic. This is a matchup of polar opposites in more than one way. Not physically though, as both Jiri and Rakish are some of the biggest, longest, most athletic guys in the roster. While Jiri is this unorthodox wild man with his hands low style and boxing-centric approach, Rakish is more of a risk-averse kickboxer that likes to make fights clean and have control of every exchange. Rakish for sure has the tools to win this fight, and I think it's closer than the line suggests. His leg kicks carry big power, and he could take a page out of Alexander Pereira's book. And he also has a few good setups for his dangerous high kick. He's also a solid grappler from top position and not a bad wrestler. And while Jiri is more than a capable grappler, he has found himself on his back. The problem for Dragic in this matchup, to me, is his shallowness when it comes to defense and when it comes to his boxing offense. He carries big power on his hands and pairs them well with his kicks, but he has had trouble putting meaningful combinations together. And when it comes to his defense, he mostly relies on backing up and moving around. But Jiri is capable of extending combinations and using his creativity to punish opponents against the fence. And it is against the fence where we have seen Rakish struggle before, getting dropped by Clark, for example. I think it's the creativity, the variety, the volume, and the willingness to take risk that will put Jiri in position to win this one, especially against the cage. I think he will bomb Rakish there. Rakish, as I said, has the tools, could very well set up a head kick or get the calf kicks going, but my pick is Jiri Prochazka by second round knockout. And with that, we get to the main card. We have a middleweight bout between Bo Nickel and Cody Brundage. Not a lot to say in this one, as it is customary for Bo Nickel fights. He remains one of the best prospects relative to his division in the sport, not only with tremendous wrestling accolades, but also top-tier athleticism, and has shown very promising submission grappling and some glimpses of striking competence. Despite only being 5 fights into his career, it is clear that Nickel has been fighting below his level of opposition in the UFC. I mean, below his level. The opposition has not been up to par. This is probably his biggest test yet. Brundage is a veteran of 15 fights, 8 in the UFC, has a respectable wrestling background himself, and is a solid striker and grappler on his own. Brundage maybe brings some kind of well-roundedness mixed with solid athleticism and experience that Bo Nickel hasn't seen before. And to boot, he's a solid counterpuncher who could put out an inexperienced striker if Bo were to make a mistake. The problem is that despite his wrestling background, Brundage has been taken down in the past. And takedown defense and ability to get back up should be the things that you should look for to pull the trigger on someone to derail the hype train. Brundage, I think, has a decent shot, but the logical pick is obviously Bo Nickel by submission on the first round. Next one is a huge fight at 155. We have Charles Oliveira du Bronx against Arman Tsarukyan. This is a lightweight bout with title implications. We have former champion Charles Oliveira looking to get a shot at the man who dethroned him, clashing with rising contender Arman Tsarukyan, who also has history with Islam Makhachev after debuting in a surprisingly competitive fight with the then future champion in short notice. Both fighters are well-rounded and willing to take the fight everywhere, but with very different approaches. While Oliveira is at his best moving forward, spinning up on damage, Tsarukyan prefers to move around in neutral space, looking for spots to use his dynamism. Oliveira loves the clinch, since he's a wicked knee user from Thais, and his bodylock takedown game is very strong. Tsarukyan, on the other hand, prefers to shoot for the legs or attempt clinch takedowns immediately on entry, and is a lot more concerned with creating movement and attacking on breaks more than grinding in the clinch. Both guys are athletic and dynamic, but Tsarukyan revolves most of his game around big moments, and even his attrition kicking, mostly focused on the body, is all about big explosions. But to his advantage, he has the cardio to sustain the pace that he sets for 5 rounds, so he should not have a problem with 3. Even at a higher pace than normal. When it comes to grappling, both are very high level. Despite all of his work off his back, Oliveira has more of a traditional BJJ game, using submissions from his guard to transitions, or using transition to leg locks to generate space, and once from top positions, he's suffocating with heavy top control, good passes, and he's particularly dangerous from the back take. Sarukyan's ground game centers a lot more in his scrambling and mat wrestling, chaining takedown attempts rapidly, opting for rides and mat returns, unless he gets his opponents cleanly on their backs. And once he does that, he has good pressure with decent passing, and also dangerous ground and pound. If put on the defensive, he's a tireless scrambler who will try to reverse during transitions and who won't accept any position of control, and he will take risks to do so, sometimes exposing his back. One thing to watch out for in this one is that both guys have been vulnerable to strikes from the left side of their opponents. I mean, they're vulnerable to their own right sides. And both guys have powerful weapons from that side as well. Oliveira developing a very dangerous left hook over the years, and Sarukyan having an excellent lead left kick from Orthodox. Oliveira has been damaged to the body with kicks in the past, especially in his fight against Anthony Pettis, and Sarukyan was badly hurt by a wide left hand in his fight against Neto BJJ. Oliveira is the proven product, and he's for sure the toughest fight for Arman since he fought Makhachev. He's the logical pick here, but I feel like he really needs a finish or a big moment early. Sarukyan might be inconsistent with volume at times, but I feel like his physicality and dynamism can keep Oliveira at bay, and he will eventually get to top position, and I trust him to stay safe and pile on the ground pound. And we've seen Oliveira break with the top position and the ground pound before. I'm taking a big chance in this one. I'm saying Sarukyan gets the stoppage via TKO in the third round. Next one is also a lightweight bout. It is a fight for the BMF title between Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. And really, who cares about the fake title? This fight is fantastic. This is a fine-ass matchup. And better yet, this is 5 rounds because of the fake belt, so thankful for that. We've only seen former featherweight champion Holloway once at 155 so far, and he had one of the best fights of all time against Dustin Poirier. And to be quite honest, even if he didn't win, he completely looked the part of a lightweight. He now faces certified action fighter Justin Gaethje, former interim champion at lightweight, by the way, who also has history with Dustin Poirier coming off of a huge knockout win over him, setting the score at 1-1. Most of the fans are concerned about Holloway's ability to deal with the power of Gaethje moving up, especially after not looking his best in his last fight for the title against Alexander Volkanovski. But I think in subsequent fights he showed that not only is his durability still there, but also his skills. Even if he's fighting at a slower pace, he's still easy out-volume his subsequent opponents in Arnold Allen and the Korean Zombie. Gaethje, who was also known for the chaotic pace of his fights, has become a more careful and moderated fighter, more so than Holloway, I would say. But he's still able to get in high-volume wars just fine, as he showed us in fights against Michael Chandler and Rafael Fiziev not long ago. This one is staying on the feet for sure. Even if Gaethje decides to put his wrestling background to use, I have a hard time seeing him holding Holloway down, who looked perfectly fine strength-wise against Poirier in his last trip to lightweight. Gaethje is probably going to look to sit back, looking for his patented low kicks, jabbing, and stepping back, looking for openings to land his counters. That has been his MO for a while now, and Holloway will look to put numbers on him with his varied output. It is on Max to deal with the leg kicks and deny the counter opportunities. He looked maybe at his most hittable against Volkanovski in the third fight of their trilogy. And Volk, despite his different style and approach, has used both leg kicks and counter punching effectively against Max. So that's something concerning for the former featherweight champion. I think Holloway's jab needs to show up in top form in this one to give him the entries he needs and to dull the triggers of Justin's counters. He also needs to kick with Gaethje, and he needs to keep exchanges tight. Do not extend himself in the pocket, since he has been more hearable lately, and Justin has gotten better at sneaking shots during lock exchanges. Bodywork will also be key for Holloway. Not only because Gaethje has been hurt to the body numerous times, but it can exploit his defensive habits of trying to roll with punches with his high guard, and especially like when he slips to his right ducking like very deep. The opening for body kicks are there, and Holloway has a nasty body kick from the left side, so maybe that can make a comeback here. Gagey on his part would be wise to fill the gaps between exchanges with kicks to all three levels, and even if he wants to control the pace, he needs to get on the front foot at times and initiate exchanges under his own terms to not let Holloway run away with the initiative. Lastly, one key thing for him will be tracking Holloway during exits, and he has added shifting combinations for this purpose, especially in his last few fights. And if he takes like a page out of Dustin Poirier's book to just like cover the distance and land those big punches on Holloway, that could be very, very good for him. It is a very intriguing fight, and I think both fighters will be playing a game of small adjustments to impose their games. I feel like Max is going to surprise people with his ability to hang with Justin, and I think his versatility and bodywork could very well carry him to a victory, but I think Justin takes this one by having the bigger moments, especially getting off with counters and managing the pace of the fight with his leg kicks. My pick is Justin Gaethje by decision. Our co-main event is for the strawweight championship, and it pairs Yan Weili against Yan Xiaonan. In a China versus China bout for the strawweight title, we have current champion Yan Weili facing off against Yan Xiaonan. While both girls come from a striking background, Weili has developed into one of the most well-rounded fighters in the division, taking full advantage of her next-level physicality and conditioning, while Xiaonan has slowly refined her striking and has patched up what was sincerely poor wrestling and grappling under the tutelage of Team Alpha Male. Most are favoring the current champion, and I don't blame them. It was less than 3 years ago that Xiaonan was dominated on the ground by Carla Esparza from the crucifix. And to add insult to injury, Weili defeated Carla herself from that same position in her last fight. But Xiaonan's improvements cannot be ignored. While her wrestling had sketchy moments, for sure her grappling defense looked vastly improved against Mackenzie Dern, who might just be the most dangerous grappler in the division. And her striking against Marina Rodriguez in a fight that many thought she won, and especially against Jessica Andrade, looked not only sharper than ever, but also more focused and coherent. If this stays on the feet, Weili will most likely look to control the distance using her in and out movement, feigning and showing multiple threats, while Xiaonan is more likely to sit back, using her kicks to measure distance and look to time the entries of Weili with her right hand. For as good as well-rounded as Yang can be, she still has vulnerabilities on the feet. Her head movement can be lacking, and she can get predictable with her tempo during long combinations. Power and speed go to Weili, but I think Xiaonan might be the more accurate and dangerous puncher in this one, to be quite honest. Xiaonan has a better shot than what most are expecting, but at the end of the day, I think it is the dynamic shifting of faces of Weili that will be too much and will give her too many options. Even if Weili gets hurt, she always had the option to close into the clinch, go for a takedown, even from bottom position. I think she will be able to stay safe. So I think Yan Weili will get the submission in round number 3. And we're finally at the main event. For the 205 title, the Light Heavyweight Championship, we have Alex Poatan Pereira against Jamal Hill. Sweet dreams. The main event is a weird one, as they usually are at 205, if we're honest. Poatan Alex Pereira comes from his impressive victory against Jiří Procházka to defend his title against former champion Jamal Hill, who took the belt from Pereira's own coach on Glover Teixeira, excuse me. Pereira clearly has a lot going for him in this matchup, particularly because his two signature weapons in MMA, his calf kicks and his left hooks, both seem to be tailor-made to punish some of the most glaring bad habits of Hill. Hill, for his part, come to this fight as the more well-rounded fighter, showing to be more than a capable grappler, at least defensive-wise, against Glover, and having wins on the feet, inside the clinch and from top position, showing to be a powerful striker and dangerous finisher in multiple phases. Hill also has shown to be flexible with his approach and used that to his advantage, adhering to what seems to be the easiest path to victory, and he's not shy about competing with fighters in any phase. willing to kick at long range, throw inside the pocket, strike during the clinch, and take top position if it is presented to him. None of this will matter if he gets finished at range though. He tends to cross his feet and narrow his stance a good amount, which could leave him vulnerable to the punching power of the Brazilian, especially the left hook, as we already said. And also, on the contrast, because he does that when he moves around, but when he's settling himself, he has like this wide, bouncy stance, and that's probably going to offer the leg kicks to Poatan, who doesn't stop jabbing or kicking the legs during an open stance matchup, considering that he mostly fights out of a southpaw stance. Pereira is not flawless on the feet though. He has seen some sketchy moments, getting tagged by both Blachowicz and Jiří in his last two fights, and while his shin seems to be just fine to take shots from some of the biggest punchers at 205, you never want to roll the dice too many times, you know? Pereira's defense especially diminishes when he's thinking about takedowns too, so even if he fails to get a takedown early, if he puts the threat out there, he could find success with his hands. Pereira's cardio has looked fine, if not spectacular so far in MMA, but we haven't seen him push the kind of pace that he did in his fight against Glover. So damage early should be a priority for the Brazilian, who should not count in the KO eventually materializing over 5 rounds. He needs to play his cards carefully early, kick a good amount from range, and look for answers to the calf kick, because if his legs get taken out early, there might not be a way back to the fight, as we saw in the fight with Prohaska. Really feels like this one could go either way. Do not expect Hill to win via grappling immediately, but things could get very interesting if this fight goes long, and with interesting, I mean, I favor Jamal Hill to win. But the advantages that Pereira will have early seem too much to overlook. So my final pick is Alex Pereira wins via knockout on the second round. And that's all the fights. I thought this was going to be longer, but I think I explained myself pretty well. No need to introduce the fighters. I'm guessing everyone knows everyone in this card. So fights to look out for. Okay, this is a big one, but fights that I expect to be like very exciting. Figueiredo versus Garbrandt, I think that's going to be a banger, even if it's like stopped like super early. Bobby Green versus Jim Miller is going to be great. I have a lot of faith in Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez. Sadiq Yusuf and Diego Lopez is the action bout in this one for a reason. I think Jiří will not allow Rakic to have a boring fight here. And then the top 4 fights. So yeah, most of these are like action fights. Things to look out for. I don't know, the big incognitos to me in this card is like big questions here. Figueiredo versus Garbrandt, who's going to look faster? What is going to be the approach? Because I think both guys could benefit from sitting back in this fight, you know? So it is kind of interesting to see who will take the front foot. I would guess Figueiredo, but Figueiredo looked like very keen on sitting back in his fight against Rob Font. But maybe he changes the approach here. I think both guys... this is a weird fight when the guy that is pushing forwards is not necessarily the one with the biggest advantage, as is usually the case. So that will be interesting. In Bobby Green versus Jim Miller, will be interesting to see if Jim Miller tries to push Bobby against the fence, if he tries to get the wrestling going. I think Miller is the better grappler here, but I don't think he's going to get like easy takedowns on Bobby Green. I would be more interested in seeing like Jim Miller try to put his left hand together in multiple combinations against Bobby Green against the fence. And we'll see how they play out in the clinch as well, because it's very interesting. It will be like the knees and elbows of Bobby Green, that kind of like Muay Thai style, against like the dirty boxing mixing the elbows by Jim Miller, who also has knees himself. So it's a very intriguing matchup. Jessica Andrade versus Marina. I think one of the big questions is if Jessica can easily get takedowns inside the clinch, how she deals with the big strikes from Marina, and if Marina can handle her composure when Big Power is coming her way, because she did not look great in that fight against Amanda Lemos. Jane Lynn Turner versus Genaro Moicano is my... It's the fight I'm the most confident about. I think Jane Lynn Turner is going to win this one. I explained already, Genaro Moicano has for sure paths to victory, especially his rear naked choke is brilliant. Turner has exposed his back in the past. But I think if you make me win, like, pick one winner here, I would be very confident in this one. Yusuf versus Lopez. I think Yusuf is cleaner, but he might have trouble with Lopez having more output, and especially if Lopez starts to like mixing the martial arts on him, that could be concerning. But I think Sadiq could surprise, getting top position. Holly Holm versus Kyla Harrison. Interesting to see if Kyla Harrison will like shoot a double on Holly Holm. We have not seen Holly defend a lot of those, especially against someone competent. The striking, the approach of Kyla will be interesting, because he is like an okay striker, but I'm not sure if that, if like America Top Team has a good idea of how to deal with that, this like karate style of Holly Holm. And also, like, we don't know how Kyla is going to look at 135. I'm assuming he will look like fine, but maybe she looks like physically fine, like look wise. And she cannot perform, you never know. Sterling versus Kadar is like, how big is Sterling going to look? Because Kadar is a big dude, man. And if he shows up like super big, is Sterling will be able to be like mobile, strong? I don't know, it's a lot of questions into that one. Rakish versus Jiří. It's the leg kicks for Rakish. Maybe top position, not so sure about that one. And Jiří could like just put combinations together, so that's that. Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage is my least favorite fight here. This doesn't need to be here, especially on main card. I know the UFC wants Bo Nickel to be a thing, but yeah, don't care. Oliveira versus Sarukyan is probably going to have like crazy scrambles. This pick is like the riskiest one for me. I think the logical pick is Oliveira for sure, but I feel like Sarukyan is like finally finding the damaging moments that he needs to make his style work, you know. And I don't know, his ability is such a good grappler, so aggressive. I think that could give Oliveira some trouble. Oliveira like doesn't panic, but he can get uncomfortable and like lose confidence. I do not think he turned into this like unshakable monster. I think his confidence is like way better than it ever was. I don't know, I think some things never change. But maybe Oliveira proves me wrong and just like slaps a left hook or catches a guillotine on entry. I don't know, man. Gage versus Holloway is the one that I had the most trouble picking. I'm sure Holloway has it in him to win this fight. It could be anyone's, you know. Like I'm going with Gaethje just because I did not like Holloway getting caught with so many counters by Korean Zombie. I think Gaethje does that same thing, but a lot better, with more power than Zombie does, especially at this stage. So I think Gaethje is going to get the big moments. I don't think he gets him out of there. And Holloway can finish Gaethje for sure, especially if he like mixes to the body, puts like a long combination going. Could happen. This is great. The two lightweight bouts are like by far the best ones in this card. From Weili Zhang versus Yan Xiaonan. I hope Xiaonan shows up with like a very good game plan and can defend takedowns, because if that happens, this could turn into a very good fight. I like Zhang Weili, but like squash matches are not that fun to watch. That's the reason that I don't like the Bone Eagle fight in here. And Pereira versus Jamal Hill. I'm a big Poatan fan, but part of me like wants to see this one go long and see if Pereira can deal with like an actual mixed martial arts fight, because it was like Jiří was closing the gap, mixing shit, but his legs were already fried, and Hill needs to be very careful with that same weapon. So yeah, guys, if you have any question about these, any of the matchups, if you want me to go into any detail or want to give me like any perspective about these fights, so I can comment on, I will be releasing a bonus preview podcast, maybe on Patreon, maybe public, I'm not sure yet. But yeah, just like send me the questions on Twitter or Discord, and I think I'll put on an extra podcast for this one, just because it's such a big event. And I'm just excited about this one, and I want to talk more about these fights. I'll probably try to get a guest on next week for the early prelims, for the review of the card. So look forward to that. If you want to support the Fight Site as an ongoing project, you want to support this podcast, my other podcast, and the constant articles that we put on the website and the exclusive content on Patreon, you can support us on Patreon. For only $5, you can get access to our Discord server and all the exclusive content that we have over there. Please, guys, if you have any extra money, send it my way. It will be greatly appreciated, and it allows me to put on good content for you guys. Very thankful about all the support that I've been receiving. Very excited about these fights. I'm very hyped. So thank you, guys, and I'll catch you on the next one. Remember to send your questions. I'll put a thread on Twitter. You can DM me on Discord, whatever you want. I'm Fenyo. I'm signing out. UFC 300, let's fucking go!